accountable, which is really important to communicate and clarify. But again, also just want to clarify that we do not have a department that is radically out of compliance with the goals that the Eight Can't Wait campaign made.
The commission is expected to continue its discussion next month. The city council is also expected to schedule a special meeting to discuss the report. It's 10 minutes past 8. Checking the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. Mostly sunny skies today, a high around 54. Not as windy as yesterday. Winds out of the northwest at 10 to 15. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 31. Then the weekend, mostly sunny tomorrow. Much cooler. Tomorrow's high just 40. For Sunday, we could start the day with some rain. Expecting dry conditions for the afternoon with generally cloudy skies. Sunday's high around 44. Right now, 51. For WGTD News, I'm David Cole.
Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We'll be talking about COVID-19 today, looking at COVID-19, but through the eyes of several different people who have experienced it in a sense up close and personal. That is, we'll be talking to four different people in all who have contracted COVID-19. And a little later in the hour, we're going to be hearing from a registered nurse, from Des Moines, Iowa. We're also going to be hearing from two different college students who've contracted COVID-19, one of them with symptoms, one of them completely asymptomatic, and finding out what they experienced. But what we're going to do first is speak with Greta Neubauer, who is state representative for Wisconsin's 66th Assembly District. So that would encompass a portion of the city of Racine. And Greta Neubauer joins us today to talk about our nation's response to COVID, our state's response to COVID, and she's also going to tell us her own story of herself contracting COVID-19. Greta Neubauer, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much for having me. Very glad to be here.
I'm glad that we can have this conversation, although I'm certainly sad about what prompts this conversation, namely COVID, which is such an unhappy reality for all of us in so many different ways. Let's start in more of a general way. Give us your impressions of our country's response to this COVID-19 pandemic since it first became a really urgent matter back in the spring. And I'm also curious to hear your thoughts on Wisconsin's response to this as well.
Yes, so important questions. You know, I'll start just with a little bit of a local perspective. You know, myself, my staff, and who are working remotely but answering the phones each and every day are talking to people who are really struggling. We are talking to people who don't know how they're going to make rent, who are concerned about the fact that their kids aren't able to be in person. They know that it's not safe, but they want them to go back as soon as possible. We're talking to business owners who have shut their doors, who may never open them again. So we are really talking to people who are struggling every day. And what we hear from people is that they do not care where the relief comes from, which side of the aisle it comes from. They just want their leaders to get to work and to demonstrate that they care about what happens to the people of this country. Unfortunately, this pandemic has become a really partisan fight when it didn't need to be. You know, we've been getting mixed messages from the top, with the president throughout this crisis treating it much more of a public, as much more of a public relations issue than a public health crisis. You know, there were plans and a containment strategy, which President Obama passed on from their experiences with other outbreaks. And we have experts like Dr. Fauci, but the president and his party have really shown a very distressing inability, unfortunately, to put people over politics, which has resulted in unnecessary deaths, unnecessary sickness, and of course, unnecessary economic hardship. Here in Wisconsin, you know, we were luckier to begin with. The governor was able to act pretty swiftly, and we were able to keep our numbers low for a longer time than in many parts of the country. But the fact is that the crisis really can't be addressed, you know, by one person or governmental branch. And so, you know, my perspective is that we really need Republican legislative leadership to come forward to work with us. They have been more focused on lawsuits to undermine common sense public health orders, but we really need them to come forward. In the last week, the governor proposed a new set of legislative bills to address COVID-19, including provisions on healthcare and workforce and more. And so what I am really hoping is that we see a renewed commitment by all of us to come forward and address these issues. I hope we see that in Washington, where they continue to remain in gridlock. I hope we see it in Madison. As I said, people want us to work together. They don't care where the solutions come from. And so I am really hoping that urgently, before the holidays, we can come back into session here in Wisconsin and pass some of the many bills we've put forward that increase access to testing, support small businesses, support essential workers and contact tracing, and the many other things that we've proposed.
When it comes to the alarming spike in cases here in Wisconsin and some of the potential restrictions that could be imposed or tightened or expanded, what would your advice be, particularly to Governor Evers, in terms of potential measures that could be enacted? What do you think are important matters to weigh, to sort of calculate in determining what is most appropriate and what's going to be most helpful for this difficult situation?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'll just start by saying that, of course, we are all tired and we all wish that things looked different. We all wish that we could gather in normal ways with our family, you know, eat out in restaurants and feel safe. Unfortunately, that's not where we are. Our state, our city here in Racine, we are in a really difficult place. I think you would be hard pressed to find someone in Racine who doesn't currently know someone who has COVID-19. Whether that's a family member, friend, or colleague. You know, our small businesses, restaurants, stores, they want to return to business, of course. Many of them have taken, you know, matters into their own hands in terms of safety protocols. But even when we see restrictions on the capacity in stores or restaurants, you know, even that limited capacity typically isn't met. And what that says is that people understand the risks that COVID, you know, that they cause. And what we need to do is we need to get the pandemic under control to begin the economic recovery. You know, it is very clear that we will not be able to rebuild and build back better without getting the pandemic under control. So I've been working with Governor Evers and colleagues, you know, to push for solutions from day one, and he continues to evaluate and move forward with every option that we can administratively. As I mentioned, a number of really common sense public health measures have unfortunately been struck down by the courts, but we're going to continue to pursue the options that we have. There's a new executive order that came out this week, which includes an extension of the mask mandate through mid-January. There is, again, a lawsuit that continues on that topic, but we'll hope that people continue to understand the importance of masks and make those choices. And then we have a number of other bills that I briefly mentioned that we've put forward, you know, everything from a healthcare heroes bill at the state level, which really supports our frontline healthcare workers, to an unemployment package on cutting red tape. You know, there's a whole long list, frankly, of bills that we have introduced. Unfortunately, they have not seen the light of day. They haven't gotten hearings. They haven't moved forward. You know, there are bills, again, that the governor put forward just recently on workforce and unemployment changes, including extending the waiver of the 1 week waiting period, an eviction ban to prevent people from losing housing during the pandemic and in the winter. And I just want to pause to say that that is critically important. We get a steady stream of calls from people who are very concerned about being evicted. Which of course would exacerbate the public health crisis for them and for all of us. Having people unable to be in a home right now is a moral crisis that we should all care about. You know, there are healthcare proposals to make it easier and more affordable to get care and prescriptions. A bill to address preventing surprise bills for out-of-network care and more. So I, again, will always continue to push for and remain hopeful that there's an ability for us to come together and work on these bills. But thus far, we have not seen a lot of effort, unfortunately, from my colleagues on the other side of the aisle to join us in putting forward really concrete proposals. You know, we need to act now. We aren't technically in session, but we continue to have the ability to come back. Everyone in this community, everyone in Wisconsin, is working really hard to make ends meet. And as many of your listeners probably know, the legislature hasn't met, I forget the exact running number, but it's over 200 days. And that is unconscionable in a time like this, in which families are so concerned about how they are going to make it. They're worried about, you know, about the holidays. They're worried about the coming year. They're worried about their kids in school. We need to come back and we need to do the work to get this pandemic under control and to begin the economic recovery.
We're speaking with State Representative Greta Neubauer from the city of Racine. Greta Neubauer, one of the things that prompted me to invite you onto the morning show is the fact that you can speak from first-person experience about COVID-19, having contracted the virus yourself. Tell our listeners whatever you think is important for them to know about this very unwanted encounter that you have had with COVID-19.
Absolutely. So, you know, earlier this month, I tested positive for COVID. Something I think that's really important to point out is when I got my test, I had no symptoms and it came back positive. You know, this is again a reminder that you can appear to be totally fine and still have COVID and be able to give that to others. You know, I learned that I'd been exposed and so went and got the test and, you know, luckily was able to do that and therefore I think avoid impacting anyone else. But, you know, I always wore my mask. I followed public health guidelines to the best of my ability and still got COVID. And so I think it's really an important reminder to all of us that no one precaution or even a combination of precautions is foolproof. My symptoms have been relatively mild, but I'm coming up on 3 weeks from my exposure and definitely still feel it. You know, we've heard recently about sort of this phenomenon of like, you know, the long COVID or long symptoms, and I'm hoping to continue to improve, but it's hard to make it through a full workday, I'll say that, even being at home. And, you know, I've been very lucky, of course, that my symptoms have been pretty mild. That's certainly not the case for everyone.
Can I ask what symptoms we're talking about? And it sounds mm-hmm. like fatigue is one of them. We've heard a lot about how fatigue to varying degrees can be a very significant part of this for people suffering from COVID.
Yeah, I would say the first thing that showed up for me was cold symptoms and some fatigue. It was, you know, not long after the election. So I was like, I don't know, maybe I'm just really tired from this emotional roller coaster. But, you know, was monitoring pretty closely at that point because I knew of my exposure. So cold symptoms, fatigue, those both increased. I had headaches and the body aches, some shortness of breath. So, you know, a lot of the symptoms. I actually, then a little later, the smell and taste, loss of smell and taste came on for me. I have a candle, you know, that smells pretty strongly and was like, oh my gosh, I got nothing, you know? So those, my symptoms are all subsiding at this point. My quarantine's technically ended, but as I said, you know, they persist. And I know of many people who have or have had COVID whose symptoms have ranged from nothing, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, to, you know, really serious symptoms, trouble breathing and hospitalization. So everyone is impacted differently. You don't know what that's going to look like. It, you know, there are some corollaries between health conditions or age, but I know young people who have been really struggling with COVID as well. So it's definitely, you know, it feels different when you have it yourself and when you know people who do. And it certainly, yeah, just brings a different perspective.
Right. As you've already touched on, you are somebody who has taken COVID-19 very seriously and have, I think your words were, to the best of your ability, tried to abide by CDC recommendations in terms of being masked in most situations and maintaining physical distancing and so on. And yet, somehow, you contracted COVID-19. Given that, what is kind of your takeaway from that reality that one can be pretty darn careful and still contract COVID-19?
Yeah, you know, I think I was sort of in this place, frankly, of saying, okay, you know, I'm going pretty quickly in and out of the grocery store or picking up takeout. I've always got my mask on. You know, I don't sit down at the dining room table at my parents' house with them. You know, I really went above and beyond. And the reality is that you can still get COVID. And I think it was an important reminder to me. I know people who have had, you know, extremely limited exposure, been in and out of a space in just a few minutes and still gotten COVID, you know, even with their masks on. So it is present. And I think after many months, it can lead some of us, you know, all of us, to feel like, okay, well, maybe I just make this one exception, right? Or I really want to see my family, you know, around the holidays. But we have to keep in mind that that it is really serious. And we want to be with our families, you know, around these holidays. But if that means that we could be missing someone permanently, you know, you have to ask yourself if that's worth it. And with these holidays coming up, you know, over the next month and a half here, I just want to encourage everyone to really think very carefully about who they've been exposed to, you know, their circles. You know, if you are planning to see family at some point over the next month and a half, consider whether or not you can quarantine. Certainly get a test if possible, if you're moving forward with a small gathering. You know, take quarantine really seriously after your test is administered. Avoid risk as much as possible. Scientists think that most transmissions right now are happening in small groups in private homes. And holidays, as much as we wish they were, are not excluded from this. So really, we just encourage everyone to take that really seriously and think carefully about planning any gatherings in the coming weeks and months.
Greta Neubauer is a state representative for the 66th Assembly District. You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. COVID-19 affects people of all ages. Next, we're going to be hearing from a Carthage music major, Nick Renkonsik, who contracted COVID-19 earlier in the fall. I asked him to explain the circumstances under which he was exposed to the virus.
So I did contract COVID as a result of having a meal with a friend that was exposed to someone else before. We had gone out to eat over the weekend, and he started developing symptoms a day later, and I started developing symptoms about a day to 2 days after that. It was very quick and sudden. I went in for an emergency test at Frederick South in Kenosha, and was evaluated by their staff, as I have some underlying conditions that could be worrisome. especially when diagnosed with COVID. Thankfully, they checked my vitals and I was healthy and all. But the symptoms came on strong and very quickly, lasting for about the 10-day period. But the funniest thing with it all is it seemed to just disappear all of a sudden after about 8 or 9 days or so. Very odd.
So unlike a lot of things that people catch, like a really bad cold or a case of the flu, those tend not to just vanish like you turned off a light switch. And in some ways, this just left your body when time was up.
It did in a very weird way. I've never been sick to the point where, you know, getting out of bed was exhaustive. But it was an evening, and I'll never forget it, where all of a sudden I had taken a nap, woke up, and felt a world of difference. And within 2 days, I was feeling pretty much back to normal, but still felt quite a bit of fatigue and a couple other lingering things that are pretty common.
And what symptoms are we talking about?
So I had fever, chills, body aches, headaches. What I find was very interesting is that with COVID, you almost get a mind fog. I've never really had that with, you know, being sick. Of course, people get headaches and such, but it was very, very odd. You almost felt dazed.
Was there anything else about it where you felt like this is not just allergies, or this is not just a cold, or this is not just the flu?
I would definitely say it was the fever. That was a little bit of a concerning one too. Before moving up here for the fall semester, my parents had made sure that I had a good thermometer and also a blood oxygen reader as well, which that came in handy. I myself have asthma, so making sure that my blood oxygen levels were in the right range was good. It gave me a little bit of peace of mind. I'd have to say, even though it's not a side effect, I would say probably the worst experience of having COVID was the self-isolation, though. That was very, very, very tough.
You mean kind of emotionally and mentally?
Yes, very much so. And even physically, too. It was hard not to be able to go outside, get fresh air of any sort, or even move around, too. And I know that's an important thing with, when a person does contract COVID, is to make sure that you do move, but also rest, healthy balance.
So in retrospect, I suspect you have some regrets about that meal you shared with this friend, or were you observing the kind of precautions that have been advised during COVID? I know that you would not be the first person who let their guard down at mealtime. That seems to be a real trigger of trouble for a whole lot of people. What about in your case?
I have been very cautious since the beginning. It's been a very long and difficult road, especially over the summer and different things, etc. I had been very apprehensive about coming back to school for that reason, since I do commute home and work. But I personally had been making sure that I was being as precautious as possible. And it's hard on campus where, you know, we could still share meals with each other in person at times, because who knows where who went over the weekend or such, or if someone went home or if someone went to their job. I do have a little bit of a regret, but I'm glad that me and a couple other people that were exposed handled this in a very mature fashion, and we went ahead and self-isolated right away to prevent a further spread.
Nick Renkonsek is a senior music major at Carthage College, a fine young organist. Tim Wagner is also a senior music major at Carthage, a fine singer and trombonist, and someone who, like Nick, contracted COVID-19. But Tim was, and to this day remains, completely asymptomatic. Here's his story.
Absolutely. So I believe it was mid-October, I want to say the second or third full week. And in one of my classes, our professor suggested that we all get tested due to a possible presumed contact with someone who tested positive. Myself and my roommate, who was also in that class, decided just as a precaution, we'd both go get tested. We weren't really feeling any symptoms, but just to be safe and have a sensibility of what to do, we both went off and got tested, and he tested negative and I tested positive, which was kind of out of the blue. I wasn't feeling any worse for the wear than my normal allergies with the changing of the seasons. But because of that, I went to isolation just as a precaution, just to be safe to everyone. I suppose there's a very small chance that there was a false positive, but that's incredibly unlikely.
So you got this test at the suggestion of this teacher, and can I assume there was maybe someone who was part of this class, maybe another student that had tested positive, and so the presumption was all of you who were in this classroom together potentially could have been exposed, right?
Precisely. And we all were quite nervous about the whole affair. It's a scary virus, it's a scary time, and as such, we just wanted to play it safe and do everything as cautiously as possible.
I'm just curious, in that classroom where this potential exposure took place, obviously they were taking necessary and recommended precautions in terms of keeping people distanced and keeping people masked. And it sounds like despite those precautions, it's possible that some kind of spread of the virus still occurred. Is that fair to say?
It's quite possible. Of course, we can take all the precautions in the world, and there's still always that level of risk within person-to-person contact. And it's also possible that that's not where I contracted the virus at all, and it happened to be somewhere else in my life. I was struggling to think of what could possibly have been a contact point that I could have contracted it from, but...
So tell us then about that period of isolation and what it meant to isolate and exactly where you went into isolation.
So I live in a house, rental house in Kenosha with four roommates. And in an effort to keep our quarantine time as short as possible while still being safe, I decided to isolate alone in my room and have my roommates provide food and other amenities as necessary. Because due to the contact points, as I understand it, quarantine for a contact point is 14 days, whereas quarantine for a positive case is 10 days. And I guess that's just how they can tell with the safety rates and how long the virus can be contagious for that time period. But because of that time frame, my roommates would have started their quarantine from the last possible point I could have been contagious. So that could have been a quarantine period of 28 days, 24.
Wow. So in other words, in a strange sort of way, it paid off in terms of length of isolation to actually be, to receive a positive test, because then the timeline begins and you can be done with isolation. But actually your roommates needed to be in isolation a few days longer than you, is that correct?
That's exactly correct.
Wow. So what did it feel like to be in isolation?
Quite frankly, it was a rough time, especially being asymptomatic. It was simply me being locked away for what felt like no reason. In reality, I was doing everything I could to keep others safe, but part of me felt like if I was actually experiencing symptoms and felt sick, then it would have felt more reasonable to be locked away, because there would have been exact symptoms I could point to and be like, well, I'm protecting people from this. Mm-hmm. But as it stood, I was just holed away, unable to leave, feeling fine, but trapped.
Right. But it sounds like through all of this, you never consciously had a doubt about the importance of isolating. It's just that it felt really strange to do it, experiencing no symptoms at all.
Absolutely. The virus interacts with everyone so vastly differently. And even though I was perfectly fine and came out fine on the other end, that doesn't mean anyone I could have been in contact with, and if I had been less cautious, spread to, could have reacted much more poorly.
Carthage student Tim Wagner remains completely asymptomatic to this day, and none of his housemates contracted COVID-19, so his self-isolation was successful. But it's a cautionary tale, a reminder to all of us that it is possible to contract COVID-19 and have no apparent symptoms at all. This is one of the most difficult, complicating factors in the COVID-19 pandemic. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. During this pandemic, we're hearing a great deal about the courage and resiliency of frontline workers. Some of those frontline workers have contracted COVID-19 themselves. I'm going to be spending the next few minutes of today's program with a friend of mine from high school days, Jody Stevenson, who is now a registered nurse with Mercy Clinic in West Des Moines, Iowa. Jody and her husband, Mark, have both contracted COVID-19. Jody says that it has been incredibly difficult for healthcare workers like herself to contend with a threat about which we knew so very little in the early going.
It has been a huge, huge, and continues to be, learning curve. We were hit with it just like all of you were. I mean, it seems like, I know this isn't exactly true, but it seems like we went to bed one night and life was moving along and we woke up the next morning and medically everything changed. Hmm. And instantly our patients started calling. I mean that literally, instantly. Day one, the phone started ringing twice as much as normal. Many, many questions. Do I come? Don't I come? Where do I go? What do I do? You know, can I have medicine right now? You know, and they just wanted answers, and we had no answers. It has continued with ebbs and flows. Everything we do is different now. The patients that can actually come to my clinic and be seen are filtered at least three times before, and I'm the front line of that. I'm one of the senior nurses there, and I triage. So if you called in and said, I feel this way, I would be one of the people helping to determine where you get help. Do you come to your clinic like normal and see your normal doctor? Do you go to the ER? Do you go to what we refer to as the fever clinic? That's just a nickname. Mercy immediately set up kind of a triage clinic that was specifically for anyone that we thought might have COVID. We would just send them all to the central location, trying to keep people as educated as possible and as condensed as possible to not spread the germs. All of that said, something that people don't realize went on in all of this is resources were moved. Resources meaning people, more than PPO, were moved. People lost jobs. People were furloughed in the medical field. We closed multiple urgent cares and moved those workers to like the Weaver Clinic or moved them to here. You know, I mean, you had a choice of either having a new job or not taking it if you didn't want it. But the clinic you were at might have closed. And we have laid off doctors in the months that followed. There was so much loss of income because patients stopped coming because we closed things that my clinic is actually down to at least providers. I called yesterday to ask for something for a patient and there were no openings for 2 weeks. And it's, wow. I mean, it changes daily because people cancel.
So in other words, the whole company has been completely restructured in the wake of COVID and certain medical offerings are just not there or have had to be scaled back massively. Yeah, I think you're right. That is a largely undiscussed consequence of COVID that it's important for people to understand. A friend of my wife's works in the medical field and I know has talked from time to time about how in the times that she's worked, for instance, in the ER, that the protocols have changed dramatically as we have grown to understand COVID-19 better. And I suspect that you've experienced that as well, that the way in which you were doing triage, for instance, early on probably has changed as we've come to understand COVID better. Is that right?
That is exactly right. And that's one of the biggest things I like to talk about and just reiterate for everybody, even in the profession of medicine, we are learning every day. And what we thought was the right way to do it last week may not be the right way to do it this week. And it's very confusing and it's very disturbing to people, but it's the truth. It's just a learning curve. So yes, we've changed everything. I ask questions now. If you were to call in and talk about, you know, maybe wanting to see the doctor, I would ask you questions that I hadn't even dreamed of a year ago to ask you, you know, on an average call.
So one of the reasons we're having this conversation is because you and your husband, Mark, both ended up contracting the virus So both of you have very personally dealt with COVID-19. First of all, when did that happen? And do you have any idea under what circumstances you and your husband contracted the virus?
That is the mystery. I have maybe a possibility we've kind of thought through of when we might have contracted it, but truthfully, no. I honestly do not know where we got it. We wear masks. My husband and I wear masks. I will say in the very beginning, we were probably a little less diligent than we are now. But I mean, and I don't mean just the last month, but I mean, in March of last year, we were cautious, but not as much as we are now. We have done some group things. We were diagnosed 3 weeks ago, tomorrow it'll be. I actually believe with all my heart, we were sick 4 days prior to that. And we were one of those people who didn't know, even me being a nurse, I did not realize. Here's the thing. I came home from work on a Thursday night and I remember very distinctly feeling on the way home. And once I got home, I am so tired. I am just so tired. But we had a conversation. My husband and I had a conversation about how tired we were. And I called it COVID fatigue. And what I said was, I am so tired of the extra thinking. Everything I do right now, you have to think harder and longer. And am I doing this right? Is this today's protocol? Not just at work, but my father is 93 and he's alive and I'm his only family. So I'm thinking about, you know, does he have what he needs? And can I safely go to him? And what do I need to be doing for him? And we had a blessing of our fourth grandbaby in June. Mm. So there's this tiny baby 20, 30 minutes away that I would love to see. But we have to scrutinize every time we do anything. Mm. And that's what went through my mind that night was, you know what? I am just so tired of all this processing, I guess. And truthfully, I was scheduled to have an elective surgery on the 29th of October. So it would have been the Thursday following this Thursday. It would have been a week later. So I had been doing a lot of prep, too, for that. You know, trying to get everybody's stuff, my dad's things taken care of, things at work taken care of, ready for that. And I just attributed it to all of that. But my husband and I both went to bed early that night, early for us, and slept all through the night. And we laughed in the morning that we were getting so old and went to work, honestly. Mm. On Friday, I went to work at the clinic. I was the first diagnosed at our clinic to have COVID. Nobody else has got 3 weeks later, nobody's gotten it. Mm. And we use protocols there. You know, I would have been masked and all of that. But nobody's gotten it. And the providers all told me, there's just no way that we have not been exposed somewhere along the line in the last months. But thankfully, nobody's gotten it.
Wow. So your suspicion is that you probably picked this up elsewhere and not from work?
It really is. Hmm. It really is. I think the protocols at the medical clinics are as good as they can get with what we know. Hmm. And I really think it's one of the safer places you can go, although I argue that with my patients on a daily basis.
I'm sure. So you experienced this fatigue that you thought was more of a mental fatigue from COVID, but as it turns out, it was almost certainly a physical warning sign that, in fact, you were coming down with COVID-19. Can I ask what other kinds of symptoms you and Mark have experienced since then?
Sure. We our church is open. We help with music at a very small church who has gone with the guidelines. And because of the age of our congregants, it's been perfect. A place set for 250, maybe 50 people would come. So there was absolutely no problem social distancing and mask wearing. I will say we're rebels. We sing. Mm. But and I know some churches don't, but we do. Again, we're separated. We've done everything we could. So honestly, we went to church Sunday morning and came home. And again, it's Sunday afternoon. We were tired and took a nap. And I woke up with the worst headache I've had in a long time. And I was so cold. Hmm. And I took a little Tylenol and I laid there for a while and I just knew it was different. Mm-hmm. And I knew the surgery was coming, and I'm like, I just remember kind of sitting up on the couch and saying to Mark, I've got COVID. And he said, you know what? I ache all over. He goes, not like earth shattering, stop the world, I want to get off. But he said, I just don't feel good. Mm. And the longer I laid there, the colder I got. And I was supposed to have surgery that following Thursday. In fact, I was going to get COVID tested on Monday. And I said, I need to go to the ER. We need to get this figured out right now, because I was supposed to work the next day and then get COVID tested and prepare for this. So we went, and sure enough, about 3 hours later, we were sitting in the ER with, they gave us fluids because they said dehydration has been big, so just kind of precautionary. They gave us inhalers because they could hear our lungs had a little bit of a rattle. We never got pneumonia, but you know, they just were suspicious. And we actually took a Z-Pak. There's debate about that, and it depends on what provider you're working with, what their experience has been, and what your symptoms are.
Right.
But they sent us home with a Z-Pak and said, and they explained to us that COVID was a virus. Antibiotics are not going to kill COVID, but it might help keep other things at bay, so we wouldn't get more sick. So,
how long did you have to wait before you got the confirmation that indeed it was COVID?
We had the rapid test, so we stayed in the ER until they had it, 70 minutes.
Okay, yep. So you knew right then and there. By and large, have you and Mark experienced it in very much the same way? Because we sometimes hear about how one person gets it and has an array of symptoms, and someone else gets it and scarcely has a symptom at all, sometimes no symptoms whatsoever. But it sounds like for you, it's been a roughly parallel experience.
It was pretty parallel. He did a little better than I did in the beginning, and then he did lose his taste and smell for a few days. He was commenting last night, it's not 100% back, but he can taste and he can smell. He said maybe, you know, he was laughing, maybe it'll help him because some things don't taste that great anymore. So, you know, diet, whatever. But for the most part, the worst thing for us, our personal symptoms, was just the fatigue. I cannot even explain. And I've had mono, and I had influenza probably 25 years ago, then bad enough that I had to go to the hospital. I was so tired. You just moved from the couch to the chair to the bed, and none of it really felt comfortable. Mm. And you never really felt like you slept well. Mm. You would doze or you would sleep a while. I'm a reader. I love to read. I love to listen to podcasts, that kind of thing. And I couldn't concentrate. Mm-hmm. I'd read a paragraph and I think, I have no clue what I just read. I don't even know what she said. So I just will give up, you know?
Wow.
So it was long and it was uncomfortable in those hours, which leads to people become, the more secluded they become and the more tired they are, the worse they feel, because you're alone.
Mm-hmm.
And your mind starts thinking. And the way our minds are created, once we start thinking, we get a little rut going.
Yeah.
And we just stay right there.
Right. It's hard to not get sort of sucked down into that abyss, whatever it might be. So are you and Mark feeling, at least for the most part, better now? And are the two of you able to be back at work now?
Yes, we were both released to work. We've both been at work all week. I've been back to the clinic. And my husband owns his own business and works outside this time of year, and it's just his business is run by himself, and our adult nephew is his partner, and so it's just the two of them. And there's some seasonal things that I can help with, so I've been out working, you know, physically working with them the last few days.
Hmm. Well, that shows that you must be feeling somewhat better than you were. As someone who is a nurse, were you able to resist kind of the, what I know probably is even more likely to grip more sort of ordinary people when they hear the word COVID? I mean, in terms of immediately jumping to the very worst conclusions about what this is going to turn into and so on. Or even as a person in the medical field with a bit more knowledge of COVID than most of the rest of us have, were you able to stay calm and in a sense not panic too much?
I was. People in my profession tend to be one of two ways. Pretty much we all fit into one camp or another. Those of us in the medical profession, as we learn of new things, we're either of the type that I immediately have all those symptoms about whatever it is I'm learning about. Oh my goodness, I've felt like this. Or we're pretty resilient and we're like, no, that's not going to be me. And I tend to fall in the no, that's not going to be me. That's just my natural bent. So I had no qualms. It did not frighten me. I felt lousy. It was not fun. And my children would call to check on us. And all I could say to them is, this is the strangest thing ever. But I was not fearful for myself. I was not.
I know that one of the things that you are anxious to share, and you are sharing this not only kind of from your own personal perspective, who you are, but also the fact that you are a lay counselor who works with people when it comes to matters of their mental and emotional health. And I know that you have thoughts about this whole matter of fear, or the fact that taking COVID seriously can easily sort of migrate into a kind of fear that can be in its own way a serious threat to our well-being. What is your good counsel to people listening when it comes to fearing COVID and being fearful in this strange time in which we are living right now?
That is very near and dear to my heart. And I do not want to talk about specific numbers very much because they change. But I will venture just a couple of things to give a perspective. Most illnesses of any chronic illness of any kind, whatever one you're thinking of in your mind right now, if it had a 0.1 or 0.01 survival or death rate, meaning 99.9% of the people lived after it, we would be thrilled. We would be so happy that we had an illness that can be dealt with, that people survive, that we can learn about. But COVID, because it is not totally, let's call it, digested yet, we haven't fleshed out every angle of it, has put fear in people's hearts, and they're losing perspective that while people are dying, and they are, that is true. I do not deny that. It is a real illness. It is true. I do not deny that. It is not the first time we have had an unknown illness. Every time every illness was ever discovered, it was unknown. And it was scary, and people died, and it's awful. But we survive. I shared an article that was written during World War II, and the Brits had not the fear of an illness, they had a fear of bombings. And they blacked out, but they did life. You know, they covered their windows, but they figured out how to do life. And that's my message. We have to be cautious. We have to be willing to learn. We have to be willing to say, I don't know, when you don't know. But you have to figure out how to do life for you.
Jody Stevenson is a registered nurse with Mercy Clinic in West Des Moines, Iowa. My thanks to Jody, to Nick Renkonsik, Tim Wagner, and State Representative Greta Neubauer for telling their stories on today's morning show. The complete interviews which I conducted with each of them can be heard in the podcast version of this program. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. On Monday's morning show, we're going to be connecting with musician Zachary Scott Johnson, Racine's own, who now lives in the Twin Cities, and who has been doing a wonderful song a day project over YouTube. And this coming Sunday will be the 3,000th